Hey, this is Matt Hawkins, and you're listening to the Top Cow Chronology Project.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Top Cow Thursday episode. It's going to be another chronology episode. I'm actually going to be talking about Witchblade Shades of Grey number 2, cover dated June 2007. The creative rundown, or lineup, if you will, it's written by Leia Moore and John Repion. The pencils are by Steven Segovia. The inks are also by Segovia. And the colors, I think the colors are by him as well. And it has a really cool cover by Ebass, Eric Basaldúa. So again, this is a crossover from Dynamite and Top Cow. Oh, you know what? I just remembered who the colors are by. They're by Romulo Fajardo Jr., who colored Nicola Scott's awesome art on the Wonder Woman book. For Rebirth. So, but again, I was mentioning the cover by Ebass. It's definitely impactful. I'm going to say that it's really cool. Do a quick Google search, Witchblade Shades of Grey number 2, if you want to check out that cover. So the story picks up where we kind of left off last issue. Dorian Gray has been arrested by Sarah Pazzini and her partner. They think that he has something to do with these murders that they have been trying to solve recently in New York City. So on the first page, we actually see a scene from the interrogation when Sarah is sitting down with Gray. But then in the second panel, we flash back. It looks like maybe it's the 1920s. And then we flash back again. The previous panel looks like perhaps the 1880s. And again, it's Gray, looking much the same in all the panels. You know, we know the story. He's immortal. He doesn't age. But he appears to be talking to different women, but all bearers of the Witchblade. So this goes back to the Witchblade scene, seeming to recognize him in the first issue. And then the scene plays out in the 1880s and actually looks quite a bit like Sarah. And she's a barmaid, but she doesn't drink, even though Dorian has invited her to take a drink with them. And then another gentleman shows up and tells Gray to hurry up and that the lovely lady would be happy to join them. When Gray says that she doesn't drink, the other gentleman says, we'll have to find some other form of entertainment, and grabs her arm. And then Sarah, who seems to be reliving this previous bearer of the Witchblade's life, says to let go of me. And Gray says, don't worry, I'm not going to let him hurt you. And then Sarah wakes up. And as we saw in the first arc, volume 1 of Witchblade, which we covered recently, Sarah, when she dreams and she's having these kind of intense dreams, the Witchblade is manifesting itself around her. So she's got, you know, both gauntlets and the Witchblade armor. It's kind of torn apart her night clothes, and she wakes up with a start, to say the least. And the next morning, she's thinking that things are getting serious. Her life feels out of control. And what if the next time she wakes up, she's somewhere else next, not in control? But she tells herself not to be dumb. It's just a reaction to the dream, like waking up shouting or crying. But she does feel like it's all related to Gray, and the Witchblade seems to know him and remember him somehow. On the next page, we see Gray. He's in a cell in the jail, and he's thinking much the same thoughts, that the Witchblade remembers him even though it's being born by a new person. Somehow it knew him, and that puzzles him. And he starts thinking about whether or not the woman wields the weapon, because all the bearers of the Witchblade have been women. So does the woman bear the weapon, or does the weapon, you know, basically wear her, like control her? Who's in charge is what he's thinking. But he seems very fond of Sarah. And then Sarah's partner shows up and asks to interrogate Gray. And as they're walking to the interrogation room, Gray's asking about Sarah. And she says, I can't really say where she's at. You have more important things to worry about, though. Then Sarah shows up, and Detective Burns, her partner, says, I was just about to question your friend here. And Gray and Sarah basically share a look, and they both realize that they each have that knowledge. They each know that they've known each other in what Sarah – for Sarah is a previous life, or at least, you know, a life of a previous bearer of the Witchblade. But Dorian recognizes her as well. So Dora seems kind of out of it. Her partner's kind of worried, like, hey, if you're sick, you know, you can take the day off. Don't feel obligated to be here. And as they're talking, another detective shows up and says, we've been looking all over for you. Forensics just got another one that you're going to want to see. And then we switch to a bistro across town. It's 12:45. It's lunch. And this guy's having a large meal, to say the least. 12 courses. Everyone's kind of staring. He seems to have a female companion who he kind of kowtows. She doesn't really say much. But he definitely seems to be enjoying life. And then as we see a picture of the body in the morgue, it appears to be that same gentleman who was enjoying a fine meal in the restaurant. So it seems like the guy turned up dead and then was seen out and about. And so Sarah wants to release Dorian Gray because she says, hey, look, this guy was locked up all night and we have another murder and he can't. So the guy that we have can't possibly be the murderer. And her partner Burns is not so convinced. Why are you in such a hurry? Doesn't prove anything. Could be an accomplice. Could be a copycat. And Sarah says, he's innocent. I know it. And Burns asks, you know, what's going on with you and him? So it's like, I just have a gut feeling. I can't really say. And meanwhile, he's actually already been released by the district attorney and has left a note for Sarah to meet him at 8 p.m. at his apartment. So again, Alice, or Detective Burns, is like, I don't know what to think. What's going on with you two? Are you friends, lovers? And Sarah's like, no, I just met him last night. I'm not sure what this is. And Alice or Detective Burns is like, all right, whatever you say, I'm gonna trust you, but it's weird. And you know what else is weird? It's weird that the first two victims were seen out and about after their deaths. So what I'm gonna do tonight is I'm gonna go stake out Stiff Number Three's apartment and see if anybody shows up. And Sarah's like, sounds like fun, but I'm afraid I'm busy. She has the 8 o'clock date, if you will, with Dorian Gray. The next page, we see that same man who was the latest corpse and was enjoying that meal is now at a nightclub. And he basically walks up and steals a girl away from another guy. And when the guy attempts to punch him, he basically just catches his fist and smashes it. And we see him leaving the dance club with the same green-haired woman he was having dinner with and this new recruit, if you will. And he talks about the tales he could tell back when they knew how to live. So they hail a cab and they head to his apartment. Meanwhile, Sarah has arrived at the apartment of Dorian Gray and she wants some answers. I want to know what you know about the Witchblade and I want to know about this killer that you say you're on the trail of. And I want to know who the hell you really are. And Dorian responds that he's Dorian Gray, and that's nothing compared to what he's about to tell her. And that's that the man that they've all been following used to be a companion of his, went by the name of Le Comte de Saint-Germain, or the Count, if you prefer. And as he says that, the scene shifts to outside the apartment. We see this apparently living corpse walking in with an arm around each of the girls. And Alice Burns pulls out her badge, tells them to stop. They all turn. The two women look like they're out of it. They're heads are kind of lulled back. Their eyes are red. In fact, all three have glowing red eyes. And Burns pulls her gun and shoots him. And he says, oh, good shot. Is it my turn now? And the issue ends. Next, the specter in my path. So a pretty fast-paced issue. It moved really quickly. Still haven't gotten a whole heck of a lot of answers about who Dorian Gray is. I'm kind of on Detective Byrne's side. I mean, we know who Dorian Gray is because we know the story of Dorian Gray from literature. But as far as Sarah, she doesn't know the story. She doesn't really know who he is. But she seems awfully trusting, especially for being, you know, even though this was put out in 2007, these issues actually take place chronologically right after the first arc of Witchblade, where she's still learning the ropes. She's still learning a lot about the Witchblade. So perhaps the reason she's so trusting of Dorian so quickly, it is all being filtered through the Witchblade. The Witchblade, in a way, knows him and trusts him. And so for that reason, it's giving Sarah the ability to trust him as well, because it does seem like she's being awfully trusting, awfully quickly. I mean, he could be lying through his teeth. She has absolutely no proof that anything he's saying is true. So there is that to consider. The art by Scovia, I was talking about it last time. It's pretty solid. Again, nowhere near as good as his art appears now. A lot of his work for Valiant recently has been absolutely amazing. One thing I will say is that color-wise, Sarah has like orange, reddish hair in this title, and that kind of bothers me because she's got dark brown hair normally in a Witchblade book, so the fact that it's red here or orangey, it kind of bugs me a little bit. And also, there's a few panels where her and Burns, it's hard to tell them apart. Even though Burns has blonde hair and Sarah has the orange hair, there's one panel in particular where it's Burns speaking, but her hair is completely orange. So I got colored the wrong color. You know, mistakes happen. Nobody caught it. But it like I said, it pulls you out of the story when things like that happen. You're like, wait, why would Sarah be saying, oh, that's not Sarah, that's Alice. Okay, now it makes sense, but why is her hair orange? You know, again, it just pulls you out of the story. So, as I said, well-paced, fast-paced, and, you know, we're moving right along. It's only a four-issue mini, and we're not given a whole heck of a lot of background yet on what exactly is going on. And, again, I'll mention the fact that Sarah seems awfully trusting awfully early for being so new to the Witchblade. I did appreciate that dream sequence and, you know, her thoughts after that about, man, am I in control of this thing or is it controlling me? Those are good thoughts. And they're echoed by Dorian Gray himself. So that's another way to think about it that kind of ties Gray and the Witchblade together. Know very little about this count, what his motivations are, what his powers are. He seems to be changing people. I thought the lunch scene was a little awkward too. Didn't really make sense. I mean, are we to think he's just a glutton? How's he recruiting and controlling these women? Yeah, there's still a whole lot that we don't know. But overall, it's a good issue. I'm enjoying the story so far. Again, Segovia's art, well, the rendering is not as sharp as it will be later on. One thing I do want to mention is his panel layouts are really great. He has a good sense of storytelling. He likes to move the camera around, different angles, different perspectives. And I like it when artists do that because it helps break up kind of the monotony of the comic page. And he does vary the page layouts as well as far as different size panels and different shape panels. And again, it really helps with the flow of the story, kind of leading your eye around the page, and also helps to keep you from getting bored if every page looks the same, that you're kind of just, you know, you're going to get bored. Color wise, other than those few minor mix-ups that I mentioned, the color art tends to be more on the primary side, but it's fine. It works for this title. I don't have any problem with it per se. So I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Comic Source Podcast. and Top Cow Chronology. So just a reminder, as you hear this, it's Thursday. Well, as I'm releasing this, it's Thursday, March 22nd. I'm headed to Anaheim probably as we speak. I'll be there this weekend for WonderCon. A whole heck of a lot of stuff to do. I've got a ton of interviews and a lot of press things to do, as well as seeing friends and everything. But if you're there and you want to meet up, say hi. Hopefully I'll have some giveaways for everybody. I'm trying to figure out a way to work all the details out. I think I'm probably going to have them already paid like way, way too much money to have them shipped. And they were supposed to be here already and they're not. And so I'm going to have to look into getting a refund for that. It's a whole big mess. But now, you know, they're supposed to be here today. They're not here today. Now they're saying Friday, but I'm leaving for Anaheim tomorrow. So I'm thinking if they do arrive on Friday, I can get somebody to ship them overnight and pay, you know, another $200 and get them to California where I am, hopefully by Saturday so that I have them to give out at the show. So we'll see. Definitely pay attention on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram as well. I'll be posting in all three of those places updates throughout the weekend about interviews and shows and the giveaway, of course. So again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.